This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Everything and everyone, including Santa Claus, has taken a backseat this week in Charlotte to another more pressing concern. What's next for the Carolina Panthers? It's been a whirlwind week for the team, and a whirlwind that's consumed fans, CEOs, politicians, and reporters that has nothing to do with the Panthers' drive to reach the playoffs. Instead, it's all about a Sports Illustrated report and an NFL investigation of sexual harassment and racial slurs by team founder Jerry Richardson, detailed by Sports Illustrated in the Sunday report. Since then, Jerry Richardson has announced that the team is being put up for sale effective at the end of the current NFL season. He is the founder and owner and has been that since the team started in 1993. Richardson has not addressed any of the allegations against him, but in a letter to fans posted on the team's website, he wrote, quote, "While I will no longer be the team owner, I will always be the Panthers' number one fan." Richardson promised never to move the team while he was owner, but whether his successor will make the same pledge is unknown. An aging stadium and a price tag in the billions for the franchise could pose problems. Joining me today to discuss the Panthers' future are Patrick Risch, who runs the sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis, and Kurt Bodenhausen, who covers sports business at Forbes magazine. I should also mention we were hoping to have City Councilman James Mitchell, who runs the Economic Development Committee, join us. He's unable to be here, but we hope to catch up with him soon for some of his perspective, because that committee will likely be the one that starts the conversation in terms of what the city may or may not be doing with the Carolina Panthers. But Kurt and Patrick, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Eric.
So let me start with you, Kurt. Before we get into where the Carolina Panthers will be playing in the long term, I'm hoping that maybe you could take us a little bit through the process of selling an NFL team. How long does this typically take? What are the steps? How will all this work over the coming weeks and months?
Mr. Richardson said he's not going to put the team, he's not going to entertain any sort of inquiries about the sale price or the sale of the team until after the current season is done. So this process will start in 2018, but you can be assured that people are getting who are interested in buying the team are starting to line things up. And the NFL will definitely be involved in this process. They have a list of people that have expressed interest in buying an NFL team, and I'm sure people will reach out to the NFL directly and say, you know, I want to put my name in the hat. But the Carolina Panthers will ultimately, and Mr. Richardson will drive this process, and it's a matter of finding the right buyer. But then the NFL is going to put that buyer through the ringer. I mean, the NFL is the ultimate boys club with a few female members in it, but they're very picky about who joins the club, and so they'll make sure that there's nothing in terms of first that the person is well capitalized and can afford to put up the multi-billion or what'll be more than $1 billion in equity, as well as be able to fund operations. And then also that there's nothing in their background that would prevent them from representing the NFL, how the NFL wants the process to work. And then once they get that owner or potential owner, the NFL owners will gather and it will require a three-quarters vote in favor of that owner. These things are almost always a majority. By the time it gets to that process, it's a fait accompli where these votes are almost always unanimous.
And let me follow up on that for just a moment. Typically, how long does this take? Because, you know, it involves a lot of vetting in terms of finances on both sides. So it sounds like from the statement that was made by Jerry Richardson and the team that they're hoping to do this fairly quickly. But what would fairly quickly be by NFL transaction standards?
That's a good question. I mean, this is buying a large asset, and so it won't move quickly. Negotiations, you know, can take some time, and then, as you mentioned, the NFL is going to vet any potential owner very thoroughly. But I think you could see something happen. You know, 3 months is probably too optimistic, but I think within 6 months, you could see something wrap up pretty quickly. The NFL is not going to want to drag this process on. It seems like the NFL is ready to move on. And so I think assuming that somebody steps up who is well capitalized and doesn't have any skeletons in their process, I think the NFL will move this process along pretty quickly. You know, similar to what the NBA did with the Los Angeles Clippers, where that team sold in a heartbeat. I mean, it helped that they had a guy buying it that was worth $20 billion and they didn't have to worry about him. But I think the NFL, you know, they're dealing with enough problems as it is right now, and making a clean break from Mr. Richardson with the team, I think, is in the NFL's best interest.
That's the voice of Kurt Bodenhausen. He is a sports business reporter at Forbes magazine. Before I bring in Patrick Risch, I want to ask you one other thing, Kurt, in terms of process. A lot of people have asked me, and I don't know the answer to this. When Jerry Richardson sells this team, does that automatically include the shares of the minority owners?
No, he doesn't have control over selling those shares. I mean, that's going to have to be something that's certainly worked out, too. You've got a handful of minority owners that own, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15% of the team, including a few prominent North Carolina families. Could one of those minority owners step up and take, you know, buy Mr. Richardson's share, which is roughly 49% of the team? That's, you know, still to be determined. But it's not automatic where he decides to sell his stake and the minority owners have to get on board also and dump their shares in the team.
So, Patrick Risch, you run the sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis, as I mentioned. Before we, I guess, delve more into the sale, the thing I want to start with you is since this news came out on Sunday evening, at least half the city has been running around with hair on fire saying, well, will the Panthers leave town? So I want to ask you, how would you assess Charlotte's chances of keeping the Panthers beyond Jerry Richardson's ownership?
I would be absolutely shocked to see the Panthers leave, to be perfectly honest. If you look at what's available in terms of markets, and maybe let's go backwards a few years. I live in St. Louis. I've lived in St. Louis for nearly two decades, so I've seen a football team leave recently. But why did the Rams leave? Well, the Rams had arguably one of the worst stadiums in pro football, and you had an owner that had his eyes and designs on moving to a vacant market. We went from zero teams to two teams pretty quickly in Los Angeles, but the point being is that where do you move a team? Do you move to St. Louis, which is now a market that's lost two football teams in 30 years? Do you move to San Diego, where they're still having stadium issues there? They can't. They've tried for over a decade to get something done there. They can't get that done. I actually have ties to Charlotte. I attended UNC Charlotte years ago. And though Bank of America Stadium isn't the newest facility, and though it requires some upgrades, I think it's still a pretty viable stadium among NFL ranks. So I think that's a huge piece of the story. And the other part of the story is, quite frankly, again, where else would you go? And that's been a fairly strong market. You know, you're not talking about a lot of other entertainment amenities within the Charlotte market, certainly for professional sports. We note that the Carolinas historically have been known as a basketball region, and of course the Charlotte Hornets started in 1988. But the Panthers certainly have a stronghold on that city and also the region. So if you're a potential owner, you've got to look at those metrics and say to yourself, this is actually a pretty strong market for football. So I really, really think it's a stretch to think that someone's going to move this team. Where are you going to move them?
Well, I want to ask both of you, one of the things that ties into that issue of the future of the Panthers is a lot of people are very concerned that the next owner may not be you know, someone who lives in Charlotte, or may not even be someone who lives in North or South Carolina. And so I'll start with you, Kurt. How much does it matter whether an owner has local ties?
I think in an ideal situation, the owner has local ties. I think it makes the fans happy. It makes the NFL happy that you have an owner that is locally invested. I think it makes corporate sponsors happy. But at the end of the day, I think it's less important for an NFL owner than some other franchises. For one, you've got one game a weekend. So you've got eight home regular season home games and then eight out of town. This isn't going on every day like Major League Baseball for 6 months. So an owner can pop in for the game and still conduct his other businesses. A guy like Stephen Ross, who operates, works out of New York, owns the Miami Dolphins. The NFL teams come up for sale so rarely. You've got four team sales in the last 10 years. That when one of these teams does come up for sale, it attracts attention from people around the country. And so I think you'll see that again with Charlotte. And I agree with Patrick. I think it's a long shot that the team gets moved out of the Charlotte market. It's a very strong market. I think the NFL is dealing with a lot of fallout. Having the moves, recent moves with the Chargers, the Rams, and the Raiders, the last thing they want is to deal with another relocation right now, despite the, you know, $500 relocation fee that the other owners are divvy up. So I think this team will stay in Charlotte, and an NFL team can certainly operate perfectly fine with an owner from outside the area.
And Patrick, certainly in Charlotte, there's already a comfort level with that because Michael Jordan owns the Charlotte Hornets, and we all know he's not here every single day. Obviously, he has very strong ties to the state, but it seems like there are plenty of examples where an owner who doesn't necessarily call that team's town his home can get along just fine.
No question. And even though Tom Gorse has roots in Michigan, he spends most of his time in Los Angeles, yet he owns the Detroit Pistons. So, as Kurt said, there are plenty of examples. And though it probably is ideal, and if you know, reviewing Kurt's article in Forbes, there are several families in the Charlotte region that could potentially step up, some of whom are currently, you know, minority owners, you know, people like the Belk family, the Levine family, Steve and Jerry Wordsworth. You know, these are some of the current minority owners that could step up, but at the end of the day, I don't think it matters as much in this day and age.
You also mentioned, Patrick, that you think it's a long shot that the team would move. At minimum, it seems to me that the first sale is not going to have anything to do with relocation, right? I mean, you buy the team expecting it to be in Charlotte. That's the premise when you start with the first sale, correct?
Unless you're Clay Bennett.
That's for all the Sonics fans in the world.
Sorry about that, Sonics fans. You may, thanks to Tim Lewicki, you might get an NBA team again soon because of the upgrades to Key Arena, although I think in Seattle they're likely to get the NHL far before they're going to get the NBA, but that's another story. Yeah, the first things first, but again, when I look at the landscape, and someone asked me this question the other day, and I just, you know, where are you going to go? I mean, the league wants to expand internationally. Are you gonna put a team
Pat, we'll pick that thought up in just a minute. I'm Eric Spanberg. You're listening to Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks continues in just a moment on 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and Carolina Pain Associates, offering Dr. Gerald Aronoff's new book, Medication Management of Chronic Pain, What You Need to Know, with up-to-date information on pain medicine and management. CarolinaPainAssociates.com. And the Charlotte Symphony, presenting Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Four virtuosic vignettes capture the seasons, evoking sounds, feel, and feelings of each time of year. January 5th and 6th at Belk Theater. Info at charlottesymphony.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, the story of America's largest house, Biltmore House. Built at the height of the Gilded Age, this 175,000 square foot chateau was filled from the start with priceless art and antiques. Its story spans world wars, the Jazz Age, and the Depression, and stands as a saga of unimaginable excess, devastating tragedy, and unlikely endurance. You'll hear about it tomorrow at 9 on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
I'm Tom Gelton. Coming up on the next On Point, the Atlanta airport loses power, a deadly train derailment in Washington State. What do they say about American infrastructure and the promises to fix it? That's coming up in the next On Point from NPR.
On Point, coming up at 10 o'clock, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
We're back on Charlotte Talks with Eric Spanberg. I'm in for Mike Collins. We're talking about the future of the Carolina Panthers. My guests today are Patrick Risch, who runs the sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis, and also Kurt Bodenhausen, who is a sports business reporter at Forbes magazine. We also were hoping to be joined by James Mitchell. He could not make it. He is the city councilman who runs the Economic Development Committee, and that committee is likely to deal with the next owner of the Carolina Panthers in regards to further improvements at Bank of America Stadium, or if there is a conversation at some point about a new NFL stadium in Charlotte. I wanted to read some comments that James Mitchell made to ESPN recently. He said, quote, "The question will become, what's wrong with Charlotte? I'm committed to being the city council that kept the Panthers in Charlotte. So the role I'd like our committee to play is to make sure we work with the new owner and make sure he or she knows how valuable the Panthers are to the city of Charlotte, and then say, what else can we do? What is your checklist to make sure you're committed to the Charlotte community?" So again, those are the words of James Mitchell. We hope to have him on in the future to talk about the city's dealings, future dealings with the next owner of the Carolina Panthers. I'm sorry, Patrick, I cut you off there because we had a break. Like to start by letting you finish your thought there.
Well, no, I just, as I reflect on the matter, we were talking about viable options. Where would they go? And I just don't see any. And the other thing I can't get over is just how much Richardson has cost himself, not only in terms of reputationally, but financially. And you know, we're talking about selling this team before he passes, which I think was the original plan,
right,
to save significant money on capital tax gains. He's now going to be paying roughly 25-26% on the gains that he would make from the sale of this team. And, you know, you look at, they put in roughly, I believe it was about $220 million back in 93, the original fee that they paid. And now you're looking at likely a sales price, a full sales price of somewhere north of $2.5 billion. So certainly a massive hit there. And, again, go back to the legacy losses. That statue is not going to remain in front of that stadium much longer. And as a side note, the Jerry Richardson football stadium at the campus of UNC Charlotte will not be named that much longer. So just a tremendous, you know, as I wrote in my Forbes Sports Money piece a few days ago, you know, it takes decades to build a legacy. I think prior to these events, he was a, dare I say, beloved figure in some parts of the Carolinas because he was a champion of bringing football to the Carolinas, and that was lost in days.
Yeah, I want to mention again for people who have not followed this closely, you know, all three of you. So there was a series of events here. You had the team announced on last Friday that there would be an internal investigation into workplace misconduct, allegations against Jerry Richardson. By Sunday, the NFL had announced that the league would take over that investigation. And then around 1 o'clock, the time of kickoff, while Jerry Richardson was in his luxury suite watching the Panthers take on the Green Bay Packers, Sports Illustrated published a story that included detailed reports, allegations of what led to financial settlements with some former employees. And that evening, there was a statement posted by Jerry Richardson on the team website that the Panthers would be sold. So that's how all of this occurred, basically in the span of 48 hours. I wanted to ask you, Kurt, I guess a little bit of a technical question here. I think that when the Panthers sell, assuming they go for 2.3 or more, this will be the largest sale price of a sports franchise in the United States, correct? Because I think the current record is maybe the Houston Rockets around $2.2 billion. Is that right?
That's exactly it. The Rockets right now are $2.2 billion. To, you know, the Dodgers, depending how you quantify that sale with the parking lots that were included and that stayed with the old previous owner, Frank McCourt, you could argue is $2.3 billion, but this will absolutely set a record, and it will blow away the previous high for the NFL, which was the Bills at $1.4 billion, which now is, I guess, 3 years ago. This will absolutely set a record in the NFL and most likely for a sports franchise all time.
How can the price sort of reach those heights when you're talking about a team that's they've been to two Super Bowls, but they've never won a championship, and they've had playoff runs, but these are not the Dallas Cowboys, so to speak.
They're not the Dallas Cowboys, but they're an NFL franchise. The NFL, despite its problems on TV and some of the protests that have been going on, and people upset with the league, it's still the gold standard. Buying an NFL franchise has traditionally paid off extremely well for owners when it comes time to sell. One of the great things about the NFL is you never have to make a capital call because you're profitable every single year. Those TV contracts, which if you include DirecTV and some of the international stuff, is paying out $7 billion per year to the 32 teams. So that's more than enough to cover player costs, including benefits. So it's a license to print money owning an NFL team. And then the prestige is fantastic. It's the ultimate in this country, owning an NFL team, which is why we Forbes has the average NFL value at $2.5 billion. So the Bills sold for $1.4. They're probably the least valuable franchise in the NFL because of their stadium situation and their small market. Charlotte's a good market. Say that again, Patrick.
Just real quickly, just to jump in, the other variable in this, Kurt, is because Charlotte is this financial capital, financial center, is the third largest financial market in the United States behind New York and San Francisco, is you don't know just how competitive the bidding process for this could be. On any franchise sale, if that competition between potential owners gets intense, that pushes the value up. And as Kurt mentioned, the Bills are the least valuable team in the NFL, and yet they still sold for a couple hundred million above what the most recent Forbes estimate was. So it does make you wonder if the current estimate of the Panthers is $2.3 billion, just based on the last four sales of NFL teams, Forbes valuations. It's almost a certainty that the sales price will be above that $2.3 billion price.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the competition for membership in this very exclusive club. Kurt, you wrote a story this week speculating on some of the prospective buyers, everyone from Diddy and Stephen Curry to some of the current minority partners. Who do you think the serious contenders are here?
That's a very good question. I don't think we know who ultimately is going to buy this team. The local guys certainly, the two founders of SAS have to be up there in terms of the two wealthiest guys in the state, and James Goodnight and John Saul. Bruton Smith, founder and chairman of Speedway Motorsports, is one of the most common names thrown around. I don't know if he really has the money to put it up. I mean, we valued him at his net worth at $1 billion in March, but that is down with it, the value of his car dealerships down this year. And this guy's also 90 years old, so I don't know if he's ready to start over. And the NFL wants to be selling their team to a guy who's 90 years old. I really think it's going to be an outsider. This country, there are 565 billionaires in the United States. You've got another 1,500 located outside the United States. I don't think the billionaires outside the United States necessarily have the same appetite for the NFL that maybe they might have for the NBA or a soccer franchise. But there are a lot, particularly with the run-up in the stock market, you've got a lot of people sitting on billions of dollars to some case. A guy like David Tepper, who's a hedge fund giant, he's a you know, I don't know if he'd dip his toe into this sale. He's a diehard Steeler fan and owns 5% of the Steelers. But this guy's worth $11 billion with a ton of cash. As his, with his role as a hedge fund guy, he could do it. A guy like Jeff Bezos is worth $100 billion. Does he want to invest in that? But I think the local guys, the Belk family, the Levine family, the Woodsworths, they all are minority shareholders. I think you have to look to them. But again, this is going to require a big check. You can only borrow $250 million from the NFL under their debt limit, unless it's through for stadium financing. So the 50% that the Richardsons own is going to cost $1 billion in equity, at least. And the new owner has to own at least 30% of the equity. So you're looking at somebody writing a check for $600 million at an absolute minimum, and then would have to also raise money for the rest of the team. So that's a big check. I mean, you need to be a billionaire if you want to be the lead investor in this project. So as fun as it might be to have Diddy owning the Charlotte Panthers, I'm not sure he has enough capital to make it happen.
I left out John Bon Jovi too, but I wanted to ask you now. What about we just had the purchase of the Miami Marlins in Major League Baseball. What about the prospect of, as they did, Derek Jeter is the front person. He's obviously not the lead money guy. Could you see something? A scenario where you have a group with Peyton Manning as the Derek Jeter in this example coming in and looking at a purchase in that manner?
The NFL, I think, would frown upon that situation. Peyton might come in and be the John Elway in this situation where he's president of operations, but he's not going to represent the league. He's not going to be the guy who's coming to NFL owner meetings. That person's going to be someone who has the 30% equity in the team. You could see somebody like Peyton Manning being part of an investment group and running the team. I think the most comparable situation is with the Denver Broncos and John Elway. But I don't think he's going to be the person representing the Carolina Panthers in terms of league operations and being that majority or having that majority stake in the team.
That's Kurt Bodenhausen, who is a sports business reporter at Forbes magazine. I want to turn back to Patrick Risch, who is the head of the sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis. Patrick, you mentioned obviously being in St. Louis, seeing firsthand what a stadium issue can do to a relationship between a city and a team. And you also mentioned Bank of America Stadium, 21 years old, is still pretty functional and certainly a lot in a lot better condition than what the Rams had there in St. Louis. But then when you look at the Panthers, they look at their rivals in Atlanta, who have just opened a $1.6 billion retractable roof stadium. How does the next owner look at that and not say, you know what, I need a bright new shiny toy too?
Well, they might. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get it. obviously, I don't think you can do that. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, there's obviously going to always be the latest, newest toy on the block. And certainly we're seeing that right now with not only Mercedes-Benz, but, of course, this year's Super Bowl is going to be played up at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, which is a wonderful facility. But, you know, again, this is I would put the old stadium in Atlanta in the same boat as the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis. These were facilities that, even though they weren't that old, they were almost felt like they were built obsolete because there was such a change in the dynamics of the construction of sports facilities. We at Wash U have developed very strong ties with our friends across the state at Populous, which is the largest sports architectural firm in the world. And, you know, they have made such tremendous strides over time with building these multi-purpose facilities. At the end of the day, though, you know, again, first things first, get the new ownership group in there, make renovations, but I just don't see a new facility in the Charlotte region any time within the next decade, even with new ownership.
I should mention that in the last 5 years, the Panthers and the city of Charlotte have invested $177 million in a range of upgrades and improvements, including video boards and escalators and other enhancements to the stadium. We have a comment from one of our listeners. RJ on Twitter says, George Shen moved the Hornets, so moving a pro team from Charlotte is not without precedent. I'm wondering, either one of you, what do you think about the comparison with the Hornets back in 2002 and the Carolina Panthers in the present day?
Yeah, I don't think that's a very solid comparison. I appreciate the person's comment, but you have to, you know, hearken back to, you know, look, Shin was not very well liked in the region. I think it was believed that the organization wasn't very well run, and I think that there was a lot of negativity. Obviously, you also had the fact that the stadium was Charlotte Coliseum, I believe, was out there on Tybola Road, if I remember correctly.
Yes, good memory.
This was not the ideal situation. There was, you know, the honeymoon effect when they first came into the market in the late 80s, but it wasn't sustainable given the combination of where the team was located, years of poor performance, and pretty much a loathed owner. Whereas in the Panthers' case, you have a franchise that you know, had some playoff success within the first 5 years, I believe, of their inception in Charlotte. And again, as I said earlier, Mr. Richardson was in some circles beloved just for bringing that franchise there. I think most people would argue it's been a fairly well-run franchise, and certainly now with, you know, a marquee quarterback. I can't believe Cam Newton's still only 28 years old. The team's made the playoffs more often than not in his short time there. So I think there's a bright history, a bright future for the Panthers going forward. But they've had a strong ownership history and executive history. So I just think the two situations are totally, totally different.
And is a key difference here also, while both of these owners have run into off-the-field controversies, in one case, George Shen maintained his ownership. In this case, Jerry Richardson is selling the team, and that's really the first major off-field controversy that he's been through as owner of the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a sign of the times, right? I mean, obviously, you know, quite frankly, if we look back and turn back the clock, Shin probably should have been forced out back then if we had the mindset that we have today based on some of the things that he was accused of. But, you know, obviously, the things that Mr. Richardson's been accused of and are being alleged, especially in the Sports Illustrated article, these things are never right. But of all times for this to happen, for it to happen now when we're seeing all the harassment cases being brought up in Hollywood and politics and sports with ESPN and the NFL Network recently letting folks go, it couldn't be worse timing for this story to come from Mr. Richardson than now.
We're going to get a little more into the issue of stadium economics when we continue talking about the future of the Carolina Panthers. I'm Eric Spanberg, and you're listening to Charlotte Talks.
More Charlotte Talks in just a moment on 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar located at The View near BB&T Ballpark in Uptown Charlotte and at Brookdale Village in Lake Norman, offering wine and beer from all over the world. Relax, uncork, unwind. TheScrewCrew.com. And Doctors Making House Calls, physician-owned and managed, Doctors Making House Calls works to help complex patients stay healthy at home and avoid unnecessary ER visits and hospitalizations. Details available at DoctorsMakingHouseCalls.com. Coming up next on Point, the Atlanta airport loses power, a deadly train derailment in Washington State. What do these events say about the state of American infrastructure and the promises to fix it? Guest host Tom Gelton is joined by guests to discuss infrastructure problems across America. That's in 20 minutes on Point here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's the end of a very, very busy news year and a very busy time in many people's lives. But you have a way to stay informed in these busy times. Listen to Morning Edition when you're getting up in the morning or making breakfast or moving around doing a little bit of shopping. Whatever you're doing, we're working around the clock to keep you informed. So when you want to check in, listen to Morning Edition with Marshall Terry weekdays from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Back on Charlotte Talks with Eric Spanberg, I'm in for Mike Collins today, and we're talking about the future of the Carolina Panthers. On Sunday evening, Jerry Richardson, the team founder, announced that the team will be sold at the end of the current season. Jerry Richardson is the only owner the Carolina Panthers have ever had. They came into the NFL in 1993. They were awarded the expansion franchise that year, began play in 1995. He and his investors paid $206 million for the franchise, and according to Forbes, it is now worth $2.3 billion. And with a sale and the scarcity of NFL franchises that go on the market, it could sell for even more of that. Helping us understand all of these issues involving the Panthers and an NFL sale, we have Kurt Bodenhausen, who is a sports finance reporter at Forbes magazine, and we also have Patrick Risch, who runs the sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis. I wonder, we were talking earlier a little bit about process, who some of the prospective owners might be. And Patrick, you were talking about the current environment and Jerry Richardson and these allegations. So when we get to the next owner, I'm wondering whether either of you think that will change the vetting process. Given the Me Too era, how might the NFL look at prospective owners to avoid even the hint of controversy going into a new ownership?
There's no question that there's going to be a much more stringent vetting process, and you may see a lot more people excluded because of maybe issues in their past. We're in a whole new world, and again, rightfully so. I mean, good for the folks that have come out in these various industries and have brought to light something that obviously is something that shouldn't happen with these various harassment cases that we've seen, again, in Hollywood, in politics, and sports. To answer your question, Eric, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that you are going to see a vetting process like no others, because the last thing that the NFL needs, and as Kurt said earlier, they've had their share of headaches this year, is they need this process to go very smoothly. And they perhaps might be wise to consult with the NBA, because if we should not forget that just a couple of years ago, the NBA had to go through something somewhat similar in ousting an owner that was not behaving well away from the court. And they were very swift in finding Steve Ballmer of Microsoft fame to step in and take over for the Clippers for Donald Sterling's reign. So long story short is they better get this right.
Kurt, I'm curious for your perspective on that, and also whether that might lead the NFL to maybe look for either female owner, perhaps, or you know some kind of diversity because of all the issues that are going on and some of the issues that have gone on within the NFL itself?
I don't think the NFL will search out specifically a minority investor or a female investor. Unfortunately, there's a limited number of women or minorities that have the financial wherewithal to be the majority owner. But to echo Patrick's comments, I think this will be a vetting process unlike any we've seen before. You're going to have questions asked with all sorts of deep investigations into things that haven't probably been looked at very carefully in the past when vetting an owner, where it's been focused largely on financial issues. But because of the current environment, the last thing the NFL wants is to end up with egg on their face with a new owner that comes in. At the end of the day, though, I think the almighty dollar is going to reign. Whoever is going to put up the biggest price tag, and assuming they don't have any skeletons in their closet, I think that's the person that's going to be approved. It's in the NFL, despite these guys don't put their teams up for sale very often, but it's in their best interest to have a price as high as possible because that raises the bar on the valuations for all of these teams. So I think these guys would love to see a valuation of $2.7 billion, because while we haven't had a lot of sales recently, And one of my Forbes colleagues, Mike Ozanian, wrote about this. We could see a lot of teams up for sale over the next few years. You've got a guy in New Orleans who's in his 80s. You've had stakes in the Denver Broncos and Tennessee Titans who have been up for sale. Those teams could both majority stakes be sold in the coming years. Mike also speculates maybe the New York Jets with Woody Johnson, now a U.S. ambassador, maybe not as focused on the team as he was before and looking to get out. He thinks you could have as many as 8 NFL franchises sold over the next few years. So it's an interesting time right now where maybe this is just the start of a lot of team sales. And so I think these guys are going to want to see as high a price as possible, particularly if they're going to take their teams to market in the next couple of years.
We have a listener email. Chip in Mooresville says, Mr. Richardson should be true to his principles of keeping the NFL in Carolina and orchestrate a sale that will keep the team here. And that ties into a question that I've had running through my mind, which is whether Jerry Richardson wants to do that or not, how influential will he truly be in this sale based on what you just said? The rest of the owners want the highest possible price. And they also are the ultimate arbiters of who gets in the club. So how much influence does Jerry Richardson have over the next owner of the Carolina Panthers?
Well, I think Richardson will pick the guy, but I think the NFL will certainly influence his decision as much as possible. And then ultimately, yes, they do have to approve him.
Yeah, Patrick? I would say that though he may have some input, I would be very surprised if the NFL, we've already seen that several of the owners have tried to exert their might with respect to a lot of other issues, Jerry Jones being chief among them, as we've seen over the last several months. So I think that perhaps a little bit different opinion than Kurt, I think that the other owners will really try to have some significant sway and pull. And Mr. Richardson's role in this may not be as large, in part because I just think the optics. I think right now, if things progress, God forbid there's any more reports that detail more about Mr. Richardson's prior behaviors, I think he's just going to kind of crawl away at this point, because as we talked about earlier, his legacy is forever tarnished. And how much does anybody involved in the NFL and the PR machine that they have want him affiliated with what happens with this sale going forward?
And again, just for a little context, we were hoping to be joined by James Mitchell, who is a Democrat on City Council, who also runs the Economic Development Committee. The Panthers own their stadium. Bank of America Stadium is owned by the Carolina Panthers, but they are in partnership with the City of Charlotte. They entered that partnership in 2013 when the city agreed to provide $75 million worth of taxpayer money for improvements to the stadium. In exchange for that, Jerry Richardson and the Panthers promised to stay as part of what they call a tether through 2019. And what James Mitchell has said in the past is that the city doesn't want to go past 2019 without some form of extension or an agreement from the next Panthers owner that the team intends to play in Charlotte beyond 2019. We've talked a lot about stadiums, both new and old, and one thing I may have overlooked for some listeners is, why are stadiums so important for NFL teams? I'll start with you, Kurt. I mean, you just mentioned $7 billion worth of media deals that these teams are sharing, so it almost seems like the stadium becomes an afterthought at some point.
Well, the stadium determines the pecking order of NFL franchises. Unlike, say, in Major League Baseball, where a local media deal is often doing that, where you have multi-billion-dollar deals in New York and Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and seemingly everywhere, the NFL, that doesn't exist. The local TV deals and radio deals are tiny because they basically just cover preseason games, and then on the radio during regular season games, all that money is wrapped up in national TV. And so with the NFL, the stadium can make a huge difference. In Dallas, they make over $100 million a year in sponsorship, more than $100 million a year in premium seating. In some other markets, they're only pulling in $15 million a year in sponsorship revenue. Some places have minimal, less and less so as everybody gets in a new stadium. But also in some other places, the premium seating is minimal. And
that money's not shared, right, Kurt? That money's not shared. That's why it's important.
Exactly. That sponsorship revenue goes right to the owner. They share gate receipts. The general seating ticket revenue is shared between the home teams and the away teams. But the reason the Dallas Cowboys are worth $4.8 billion and the Buffalo Bills are worth a third of that partly is because of the brand of the two, but really comes down to the stadium. Jerry Jones makes $300 million a year, over $300 million a year in profits on his team. Because of the stadium and controlling all the events outside of football that come in there. So your stadium is an absolute critical factor with the NFL, much more so than you see in Major League Baseball or even the NBA, where local TV contracts are becoming such a huge influence on the pecking order of franchise valuations. But in the NFL, the pecking order is determined almost exclusively by your stadium.
Patrick, we've talked about how rare these sales are of NFL teams. I'm wondering, how often do they take place under a cloud like this? Do we have any precedents as examples of what might play out with a Panthers sale?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, really not with so much with respect to the NFL, but when this happened, the first thing I thought of was obviously what the NBA went through with Donald Sterling just a few years ago, which eventually led to a very formal and public ousting, with David Stern basically banishing David Stern being the commissioner. Excuse me, not David Stern, Adam Silver.
Adam Silver,
The commissioner of the NBA banishing Donald Sterling, essentially to force him out of ownership. Now, that did not happen here, but I have no doubt that once these stories started to percolate, there was no question that somebody from the league office perhaps made a suggestion to Mr. Richardson that it was time to step aside gracefully, because I have a feeling that it would have led to something much more public. So, no, this is extremely, extremely rare for this to happen. But that being said, do we think this is the last person in pro sports that is going to have this happen to them within the next year? My guess is probably not. And if it's not an owner, certainly high-level executives. Again, this is the Me Too kind of era that we're going through right now, and the reality is that sports for a long time has been an old boys club and somewhat more misogynist than what you see in other industries. So would I be shocked if someone else was outed the way Mr. Richardson has been? Absolutely not.
So, Kurt, that's an interesting point, because while the NFL did not force Jerry Richardson to sell, that sale came up pretty quickly, almost instantaneously, with this investigation. Does that set any kind of precedent or marker for the next time around something like this pops up in the NFL or another league?
I think each case will be treated individually, but there's no doubt in my mind that there's a couple sports owners out there that are thinking, whoa, I got a couple skeletons in my closet. I hope those stay there, because we're living in interesting times here where things can happen really quickly. I mean, you look at this franchise, and Patrick talked about this. I mean, Jerry Richardson was a pillar of the community. It brought football to Carolina. In 48 hours, he was out. I mean, this can happen like that.
And Kurt, if I could, you think about what happened in college basketball back in September when that report came out by the FBI. You think there was more than just the Patinos of the world that started to get a little nervous. So I see some parallels here with this happening to Richardson. I am sure, as you said, there's some nervous people out there.
I'm wondering, we're getting a little bit short on time, but I'm wondering from both of you, we've talked a lot about the future of the Panthers, but also the legacy of Jerry Richardson. The NFL is still moving forward with this investigation. How much of a ripple do you think this investigation will ultimately make if the findings come out once he's no longer associated with the team?
I think that it has to continue, and the reason why is because the NFL would catch heck from a lot of people if they just simply dropped the investigation just simply because Mr. Richardson was stepping down. So for various reasons, hopefully because they want to, but also for PR reasons, they have to proceed with this. And again, it's gonna shake some owners and execs to their core. It's going to scare a lot of people.
Kurt, you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, first off, they're going to want to investigate this thoroughly. Who knew what? Does this touch on the significant minority partners that the Panthers have? And so I think the NFL, which has been blasted in the past for how it handled some investigations, certainly whether it was the Ray Rice situation or Deflategate with destroying before Deflategate, the spying episodes with the Patriots where they conducted an investigation then destroyed all the evidence before releasing anything. The NFL has really handled these things poorly sometimes in the past, so it's imperative that they get this right, particularly in light of the public sentiment right now.
So the last word went to Kurt Bodenhausen. He's a sports finance reporter at Forbes. We were also joined by Patrick Risch, who runs a sports business program at Washington University in St. Louis. And again, we were not able to be joined by James Mitchell. We'll catch up with the city councilman in the future on the Carolina Panthers and where they go next with the city. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. You've been listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.